It's an ill mind that's still time build and refine. Still getting mine in the 9 at 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 getting mine in the 9-9-9-9-9-9. Building refined, still getting mine. Geometric, 9-9-9.
Charging,
9-9-9.
Stylus Chris,
9-9-9. DJ has one, 9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-
once again, 9 p.m. Welcome back to the 9 at 9 DJ podcast, the online show where we have 9 DJs on a roundtable panel discussing today's DJ topics. Tonight is part 2 of episode number 14. Our special guest panel from last week is back here tonight, and we're continuing the conversation about the mobile DJ industry, DJing for weddings, corporate events, private parties, all that jazz. So give it up one more time for our special guest, Digital Dave, Megan Taylor, Nelson, DJ JD, and DJ Little Rock. And of course, we got the rest of my crew here with me tonight, my co-host, DJ As One.
What's up, guys?
You got Sean J.
What it is right now.
And Stylist Chris.
Peace. What up?
If you guys missed last week's episode, you can always watch them again on Facebook.com/BeatRefinery or YouTube.com/BeatRefinery. This show is brought to you by Beat Refinery DJ School at Bach to Rock. Learn how to mix, scratch, and make music by visiting BeatRefinery.com. We have school locations all over the U.S. of A. So let's get on with the show. We're going to start the show off with another edition of Unpopular Opinion. This is where one of the hosts will bring up an opinion on a particular topic to which most everyone pretty much agrees upon is true, but that host will argue and debate the counterpoint or the unpopular opinion of that topic. So on that note, Stylus Chris, it's your turn, buddy. Go for
it. What's up? Yeah, so if you guys have been tuning in the last few weeks, this unpopular opinion is definitely something that we want to use to educate, not only from whatever side you're on, if it's learning about the other side, or to really realize that maybe you need to step it up a little bit. This week, I'm going to talk about how...
Or step down.
Exactly. We're going to talk about how the wedding industry in general has definitely created a lot of lanes and avenues for people to generate income. DJs being ones that have found their way into creating some new space for them to gain add-ons to their contracts. The two most popular ones being lighting and photo booths. And most DJs in the wedding industry would say, yeah, man, I'm gonna grab a bunch of lights, I'm gonna figure out how to program them, I'm gonna grab this photo booth, I'm gonna set it up over there. And what they're doing is actually completely diluting what they should be doing, is DJing. DJing, if you're a master of, and that's what you say you are as a DJ, in my opinion, you should be completely focused on that job and that job for the night. If you have to sell that you also provide a lot of other services, that's the same as like the floor saying, hey, I can also cook your food. Don't worry, I got it for you. Or would you want the photographer to also be the person that's providing the venue? We look at vendors and the people that are professionals in each craft for what they are. Now, I'm not talking about the companies that are multimedia, such as some of our guests on here, that have built themselves into a bigger company where they not only provide DJ services and lighting services and photo booth or entertainers or whatever it is that they're adding on. I'm talking about you, the individual that thinks that it's okay to set up all these lights in a photo booth, and when the photo booth props have moved off and need to be reset, that you can leave your DJ space and go do that. We have come to a point where the clients have asked DJs to do so many, wear so many different hats for them. Why? Because they don't value the music. If they valued what you were doing, they would only want you to be right there taking care of the music for them. And what you do is you allow yourself to compete now against other people that consider themselves professionals. They consider themselves a professional lighting company, or they consider themselves a professional photo booth. If you want to reach into the next tiers, the levels up that go to where they want the best of the best, you don't want to be cutting off somebody that you want to be your partner. You don't want to be, hey, I can also provide this service for you, and cutting off somebody else's way of generating income. Most of the bigger, higher-end clients, they want people that are professionals. And so with that, I'm going to let our crowd, our great staff, our crew, these illustrious guests, put their kind of spin on it. They can either say the opposite of me, which is fine. This isn't an attack on anybody, because as I said before, our guests here, they run a professional side of things where I know that they have multiple people working. They're not just sending their DJ out to fend for themselves in all these scenarios. They have professionals in each spot. And so I want to just run it over to Nate, because I know our guy Nate Nelson here is providing big prom events, festival style events, where I know he's going to have to bring in a lot of other sides and avenues of this. What's your take, Nate?
Nate Dogg?
Yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying, because if you can actually have other people refer you, then you in turn get more business. But if you're actually good at the service that you provide and you can put people in the right place, as far as like my team, we have a full production team that can do anything from one uplight to rigging truss in the ceiling and movers and cryo and any special effects that you really kind of need. You know, we go above and beyond to try to make sure that the client knows and understands that we have different people taking care of different aspects. So we talked last week about my event last night. I had uplighting and a photo booth on that event. We actually had our mirror booth. My team that rolled with me was three deep. It was me, and I'm in charge of music, master of ceremonies, and kind of the timeline and all that. That's what I do. I'm DJing. That's me. I have my lighting assistant, who is also my assistant, who stands next to me, because his lighting controls are right here where my command controls are, because in order to run an effective light show in a party, he needs to be able to know where I'm going and really be able to control the lights. And then I have a third person that is strictly in charge of the photo booth. I don't touch it. I don't need to touch it. I don't need to handle anything. They're trained. They're fully. They understand it. They know. And they're the ones that are kind of handling the details with the client beforehand. So if you set your procedures and your standard operating procedures, your SOPs, if you want to call them, if you set them correctly and you have the right people in the right spot, then you can go out and be effective in selling these add-ons. But if you're trying to do something by yourself, you're trying to wear three hats. You're trying to be Dave in the DJ booth and curate next week's playlist and all those different things and take shots and do all the things that you got to do. Like, stay in your lane, do what you got to do. But if you have the tools in place to be able to do that, and you have the means to be able to train the people to do the job that they need to do, then you can actually go out and really, for us, EE is one of our biggest ways of making money. Like, we EE is entertainment enhancements, and that would be lighting, photo booths, cryo, dancing on the cloud. We don't do the snow because we don't know what snow is in Texas. So, you know, it'd be just kind of weird if it was snowing at your wedding in Texas. But, you know, all the yeah, I'm just saying, like, any of those add-ons that you can see, we've got pixel tubes, we've got we're just trying to stay ahead of the curve. We want to be the latest and greatest with all the technology out there. And as soon as we get it, our production team's getting their hands on it, trying to play with it and trying to figure out all the cool features that it can do, so that our guys are fully trained to go and be able to do the best they can in the field.
Now, let me ask you a quick question, Nate, because I'm curious about this. And this is by no means a critique. It's just more a curiosity, because I feel like I've seen this. Have you ever had that moment where there was like a photo booth kind of meltdown And even though the tech is trained in running the photo booth, you as just the more tech savvy person as a DJ and running the company might know a little more. Like, have you ever had that, you know, one time disaster moment where you've had to step away and do something with a photo booth?
No, we have training videos online on our private YouTube that if there's an issue with the printer, if there's an issue with the server error, whatever, they are supposed to reference those videos first. And if they can't get it resolved through that, then they call our on-site manager on duty, which is always at the warehouse the day of, that knows every in and out of all of our tech. So it's not foolproof. There is things that our tech guys, we use a lot. I mean, if you guys know what... AnyDesk, I think it's AnyDesk, right? Is that what it's called? Mm-hmm. You can log in and actually see the desktop of the other computer. So we utilize that so that our techs at home base can literally log in and see what they're doing. We also use a lot of the softwares that you program from home, from one home computer. And then if, like, let's say there's an error on a photo booth template, the date's wrong or the name spelled wrong or something like that, then our techs back in the warehouse are changing that. And then all they got to do is say, hey, go refresh your photo booth. Everything's refreshed and comes back through. So any day that we have more than three production events going out, we have a warehouse manager in here on duty, making sure that they take calls until everything is a green light. And then even through the events that they're, you know, answering phone calls for our tech support, where we know that, you know, that's the beauty of us having a large multi-op with having 30 DJs, is that we preach to our DJs that your job is to be in charge of the fun. We don't want you handling finances. We don't want you handling contracts. We don't want you handling any of those things. We want you to focus on the end product, which is making sure that party rocks. And so, you know, we've kind of eliminated all the other aspects of letting the DJs try to manage different things. We just, they go in, they do their party, and everybody else handles their business.
Yeah, I can say I have a mirror photo booth as well and do uplight and all that stuff. I got to definitely agree with Stylist Chris on the whole perspective of you got to have people in each of those positions handling those things.
Absolutely.
To Dave's point, I have been in situations where I've had to troubleshoot the photo booth, never during party rocking time. Usually it's during the setup time, which is earlier on in the event, where I might have some time to sneak away and kind of handle that. So I've never been in any like long-term crazy situation. It's always been handled early before we've really had to get into game time. I think it all comes down to building your team, right? Kind of like Nate was mentioning, he's got a huge team that's there to handle everything behind the scenes, on the day of, everything. And you just got to build that team around you to have those people that are going to be able to handle that photo booth so you don't have to deal with it. Handle the lighting so you don't have to deal with it. I think on the lighting side, I've always had an assistant, just like Nate mentioned, same kind of thing. Assistant who's kind of there helping me out the whole time. And then when we get into the dance mode, they're there changing light cues and making sure the light's matching the music and all that stuff. I've been playing around with the Sound Switch app that works with Serato, that lets you DMX program lights with Serato, might take a little bit of the work away from them. It lets you kind of, you know, control the lighting so it's actually completely synced to the music. You can, like, you know, program cool light shows to specific songs. The first one that I was practicing on was Uptown Funk, because, of course, you're going to play that, and it's going to be a cool little effect. So I don't know if maybe down the line having that person dedicated to the lights the whole time is going to be as necessary as maybe we get away from some of that stuff.
But you're always going to have issues that are, you know, an uplight dies. That, hey, I need you see that uplight's dead. And if you have we always have a few backups in the back. If you're running battery or wireless DMX, like, you know, go change that battery out and, you know, plug it back in or whatever. So you're not going to want to leave behind your booth to go do that. So, I mean, I always feel like having the assistant there for lighting is great, but it's also an extra hand for you. And, you know, their job is typically to set the stuff up, and then what are they going to do for the other 3 or 4 hours until you get to the dancing portion? You know, they're there to assist you, you know, to make sure that you can do everything that you need to do. One thing that I want to tell you guys, like, during quarantine that we've ran into, is that a lot of our gear has been sitting. And if you haven't done a wedding yet, plug your stuff in and test it. like literally run your lights on, like literally if you have battery powered lights, run them and do run tests, because nothing's like, we shut our stuff off for like 6 weeks and they set, and then we brought them back and started cycling again. And we were smart enough to actually like plug them in and run them. And we lost almost half of our batteries because they sat dormant for so long. Wow. So we've talked about batteries last week, but make sure you're running your stuff, guys.
You're definitely not supposed to let it drain, like, what is it, like 2 or 3 months? Like,
right.
The impromptu tech tip of the week from Nate Nelson.
Probably just save some.
Yeah, that's you just put me into a panic.
What, here's what I want to know.
I got to go start checking stuff out.
I mean, for real, we have like 400 uplights
for the rest of the show.
We have 400 uplights, and it's one of those things. It's like we've literally had to run test on a lot of our like stuff that we always, our newest stuff is the stuff we're sending out on most of our events. And then when we get on a busy weekend and we have most of our stuff out, it's, you know, we had to start literally run testing because our newest stuff was dying. Like we got stuff in February, new lights that now like 3 weeks ago, or the batteries are dying within 2 hours. So, you know, there are issues that if you don't have them running, and those batteries are built to run and drain and run and drain and run and drain. They're not meant to sit on a charger for 6 months.
Right.
So really test your stuff and make sure you guys are checking those things before you go out. That's just a tip that we've learned, and we've had to learn the hard way. Because you know, it's real. You don't think about those things because you think that it's going to be reliable and work because it worked back in March. But test those things out.
Yep.
Now, Megan, do you do your own lights?
No. Well, not really. So, Chris, I'm kind of like the school of thought with you. And just because, like, my business is built different than I think what Nate's saying, too. So it's just a little different. But I don't, because I honestly deeply respect the art of lighting. Mm-hmm. And I think because I'm at so many different venues, it's such a different game. And it's, I really, really leave it up to the decor professionals. So I don't normally do that. And I think sometimes, like, if someone's looking for a package, not that, I mean, people have all different budgets, but, you know, it's, my value is not, you know, in the package normally. So, and I completely understand why people ask that. So I just try to kind of steer that conversation a little different. But also the other thing I've really learned is I used to not get involved in the lighting, and I'd say like, no, I just don't do it, like or whatever, and refer somebody. But I've kind of screwed myself because we talked about being too like light and dark. Like I've got a big opinion about how lit the dance floor is as far as like if it's too bright or too dark. And so I've gone around and like yanked, you know, a $20,000 light, like it's because I think it's just alive, you know. I know, and so like I just learned that like it makes a difference. So I have learned to have a really good conversation with the designer about that ahead of time, and just sort of like really make sure we're on the same page.
That's a great point.
And I didn't do that before, so that has been like that's kind of how I handle that situation.
Wow. That's a great point. Absolutely.
That's a really good point. I think we, Dave, you and I are probably similar, and a lot of times we are asked, we tell our clients we don't do lighting, but they still want us to provide the vendor for them. And so what we're saying to a lot of you guys is if you're not at the level of Nate and JD and Little Rock where you're having, if you don't have a standards of procedure and operations manual, you probably shouldn't be attempting a lot of this stuff. These guys have obviously thought it through all the way to the end to protect the quality of what they're doing. But I'll ask you guys to think about this when you, any wedding you're doing, I guarantee you per capita, per rate, if you pound per pound, the DJ is getting spent the least amount on when it comes to all the different calibered check marks that people have to put into making their event go. Venue, food, staffing, photographer even. The DJ, what they pay a DJ per what your expertise and your value is the most crapped on of anybody in this industry. And so the more that you give people at your, I'll give you all of these things for this price, you are feeding into that same scenario. And you have to understand what your worth is and your value. And if to me personally, if someone asks me, I'm on a budget, I usually say I'm probably not the DJ for you. And that's just being straight honest, because it's not about your budget. It's about your mentality. It's not about the pricing. It's about the fact that you're already saying that you're not – what you are to me as a DJ and what your value is not as important as what I'm willing to pay for you. And the opposite you'll find is the clients that are willing to pay your price are the ones that will actually give you the least amount of stress, because that, they're hiring absolutely. You. They are 100%. Hiring you.
Give them an air horn on that one right there. Oh, yeah. That's facts.
The ones who want the least, the ones who want to pay the least want the most from you.
Absolutely.
I can tell you any wedding that, and I don't do it anymore, but any wedding back in the day, even that I discounted like $200, was always the most like needy people, and the night of the most like, you know, I mean, the ones that pay your full rate and don't even bat an eye, those are the ones usually. They just want you to come in. They barely want to give input. They just want you to come in.
And they want you to be your best self. That's why they're hiring you.
And they want you. They don't want a random DJ.
That's right. That's right. And let's – yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, on that same front, there is a kind of a ceiling – that you do get to if you only offer DJing, though.
Right.
So that's why I ended up adding the photo booth about two and a half years ago. I'd been putting it off forever. I didn't want to get in the photo booth business. That was the last thing I wanted to do. But I kept seeing that I was meeting with clients who had inquired about a photo booth, and I didn't really have another vendor that I was going to subcontract out to. That's definitely an option that a lot of people should look into, possibly.
Exactly.
But I noticed I wasn't booking some of these weddings that I should have been booking, because the client didn't want to mess with all these vendors. They want one vendor for the DJ, the photo booth, and the lighting. They don't want to deal with a bunch of contracts. So just being able to add that, obviously doing it the right way, making sure you have a dedicated attendant for it and all that, is super important. But being able to add that definitely like got my average rate way up. Got me booking more events that I wouldn't have booked otherwise. So it's kind of unnecessary evil in a lot of ways as well.
Well, and I think Chris spoke to something. I believe it was Chris that talked about this when he was kind of introing this topic. And I think it's important is not – if you're providing both as professional of a product as a you know, private photo booth company would, and you're charging the appropriate rate for that, you know, then you're doing justice, and you're not really under, you know, DJs always complain, especially in the club world, you know, about being undercut and DJs doing it for less. But there's some of that in the wedding world too. You Absolutely. Know, this DJ's working cheaper, this DJ's working cheaper. So, you know,
and clients will put that against you. Clients will say, oh, this guy gave me this price. So it's not even necessarily, you know, that person, and I'll let you continue, Dave, but I just wanted to make that point that sometimes a DJ just puts his rate, and that's his rate, and he's not trying to undercut or whatever, but the client will continue to pit us against each other.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know what I always say to people, Dave, when someone says what Chris just said, when a client comes back and says, well, the other top guy in Dallas said he would do it for, you know, if you came in at this rate, he would do it for $500 less. And I was like, oh, so he doesn't think he's the best. That's what I say. See what they say. That's
no. I agree with everything Chris said. Like, that's my biggest pet peeve in this industry. And just it rubs me the wrong way just for so many reasons. But just using the current situation as an example with the pandemic, and I don't want to throw anybody's names out there because they're, I guess, kind of local DJs and probably run in the same circles that some of us do here, but what would we say, March 12th, 13th, 14th, when weddings started to cancel for the next few months, you know, in some of the DJ forums that were in on Facebook, I was seeing some of these guys that were so high on their success over the past couple of years and promoting themselves. And then March 14th, there's a Facebook post and this guy's selling his car and complaining about how much business he doesn't have right now. And it, for me, it really, and this is one of those people that tried to do too much, you know, and it, for me, it really separated, you know, who is making the right, who is navigating this as a business the right way and who isn't. And you see people who bite off more than they can chew, you know, because not only are you losing business as a DJ, you're now losing business as a photo booth operator, lighting, and everything.
Well, and I was going to say, let me just real quickly, I was going to say one thing that I've always thought of, and I do uplighting. I don't have a photo booth, but I do have uplighting, but I've always very, very particularly considered my ROI, my return on investment on any piece of equipment I buy. And I think some DJs that are super techie just see this as a toy and that as a toy. And then next thing you know, you're spending, you know, 40 grand a year as a single op or, you know, on equipment and gear. So I think also too, it's important to say, like, to yourself, when you're investing in a photo booth or uplighting, if you are doing it, how many weddings is this going to take me to pay itself off, in essence?
Yeah, I've always had the stance, and that's like our company's similar to what I think Nate is saying, is we want our DJs to just really worry about just DJing. You know, our company is divided into two owners. You know, we have Ryan, my business partner, who handles all of the contracts and networking and takes that on as a full-time job. And then there's me, who's just checking in with Art and Sean, like, hey, man, how are you today? Like, are you good? Like, how was the wedding this, you know, 2 weeks ago? Like, how do you feel? Like, I'm more the DJ, like, liaison, and make sure everybody's cool and just feeling all right. And if you got any issues, like, let's talk about it and let's figure out how we can just be a better DJ team in general. Like, what are you doing different? And we just try to focus on being a great DJ, like Chris is saying. That way, if we can't do that, people don't look at us anymore. And then with the more you bite off in the wedding industry, I look at my vendors in our current area, like, we're all family, you know, we all refer each other. And the photo booth thing is a little bit tough sometimes because you have a lot of photographers and videographers that get into that market as well, and I never want to step on anybody else's toes. And I've seen that with some other people where they're a DJ and they're offering, oh, you don't have a planner? Well, such and such can come and be your planner. Oh, you don't have a photographer? Well, we also offer photography in this. And it not only, like, you're in this vendor family with everybody and you're taking jobs away from people. And I get that it's a business, but we are a small community sometimes. And you never really want to get that bad reputation. Because I know photographers that are great at what they do, you know, and kind of like Jason's saying, where you reach a ceiling. This would have been our ninth full wedding season, and we've kind of reached that ceiling. You know, we have a small team of about 9 DJs. So we've kind of reached that ceiling to where are we going to go now? We can stay right here when we're making money, but we need to start offering some of the things that Nate's saying, in order to grow. But how do we navigate that the right way to where we're not being buttholes to photographers and people that we work with that refer us? Yeah.
I think they're like
people, sorry, like, Megan, you go. Oh, sorry, that they like, I get my referrals from those people, so I think it's just sort of like, I really wouldn't want to take, like, you know, decor, like, because that's where, like, a lot of the referrals come from. And I think, like, also one of the things, I went to this DJ collective with Nate and Dave were there last time. Like, I just realized, like, markets are so different. Mm-hmm. Like, where, like, there's this East Coast company that, like, did, like, this phenomenal job with the lighting and the DJ, and they interacted with it all. And, like, that's just, like, not in Chicago. So I think it also depends on, like, who you're working with, you know, for things too. The only things that I have added on are musicians now. And that's working, and it's a really, really good add-on, and, like, was really kind of had a big vision for it for, like, this year that, like, didn't kind of fell short a little bit, but that is where I've enjoyed adding on that piece of it to the business.
Yes.
I was going to say that, I don't know, I totally lost my train of thought.
Hey, no, but I was going to touch on what...
It happens when you get older, JD.
I know. Oh, no. I was going to say, we've all run into those companies that do all that stuff. Like he mentioned, like Kyle mentioned, the planner, the photographer, videographer.
Yeah,
like,
videographer, DJ
all of
companies,
it,
yeah.
Like, that's just trash, obviously. I think there is, like, a code of ethics among the wedding community where... Like, DJs are known to also offer these services, lighting, mm-hmm. and photo booth. and a couple other entertainment-based activities, maybe, but not photographer, not videographer, like
not planner.
Like, yes,
those people refer you.
Exactly. Like
that's a funnel.
You have to look out for those people because they are your whole referral base. I mean, that's what my whole business is based on, is those referrals, you know.
Absolutely. Hey, Kyle, so when you talk about hitting a ceiling, so with us, we almost felt like we hit a ceiling too on the wedding side, because if you go to LaForceEntertainment.com, it's strictly wedding. So we had to think, how do you get out of that ceiling? How do you get to other areas of corporate AV, you know, schools was our big thing. Like, schools are not going to go search Google for DJs and then click on LaForce Entertainment and just see wedding DJs and say, hey, we want to hire them for our proms. So that's where Kings of Prom came from. The idea was, let's branch out, let's market, let's create a whole nother brand, which Kings of Prom runs through the exact same warehouse, the exact same crew, the exact same DJs, the exact same gear going out. You just rebrand yourself in a different market so that you can actually escape that ceiling and try to hit your ceiling on the other side. So think about when you guys are looking at your businesses and structuring your businesses, if you want to tackle another market, create another brand and do exactly what you did with the brand you have now. But create, like, one of the biggest things that I've heard out of this pandemic is when you're looking at restructuring whatever you're doing with your business, don't rebuild the business that you had. Rebuild the business that you want to be.
Yeah, that's good.
Think about that for
that's
a second.
Money.
Man, that's deep, Nate. That's
fucking good, Nate.
Nate's book. I can't take credit for it. George Lopez, that's my dude. He gave me that. But, like, for real, don't try to rebuild the business that you had. Rebuild the business that you want to be. Right now, there's no better time than now to recreate your business to what you actually want it to be.
Well, here's what I want to know from especially from the multi-op guys, because, you know, I'm a single op. I'm assuming Dave and Megan, you guys are single op as well. Especially like trying to hit, you know, what, you know, I'm booking myself like fully, like, you know, pretty much like every year now. But I've hit that ceiling to where, like, you know, I kind of want to convert to multi-op and start, like, you know, really just, you know, getting a roster of DJs and getting up to that level as well. So what for the multi-op guys, like, what was the turning point as far as, like, you know, getting into that next level? What do you guys have to do? We'll start with JD.
And I could say it took me a long time to come around to that reality of needing to do that. I wanted to forever. I was super scared to do it. Because
and I think I'm at that level right now where I'm kind of scared to, like, you know,
yeah, I mean, and I was definitely there and I'm still there. I'm not gonna lie, I'm still there a bit. But you know, we all feel like our business is built around us, especially at the beginning. Like, people are booking us because we're the awesome DJ,
right?
And we are that awesome DJ to ourselves. We think we are, like, we can be a little narcissistic that way as entertainers, right? So what I found, though, was the first DJ I brought on, I actually put him out with some other companies in the area. He doesn't just work for me. He works for some other companies as well. But I put him with them first, and he would always shadow me and everything. So he knew exactly how I did, how I ran it. I actually taught him DJ from the ground up starting about 10 years ago. And he did his first weddings with other companies to get his feet wet. And then when I felt, after like a year of that, I felt he was comfortable to start recommending him for me. And what I found out with clients, because I had the expectation that these clients, when I offered them another DJ, they're going to be like, oh, well, no, it's not you, because you're amazing JD. We have to have you. If you offer someone else, we're definitely not booking with you. That was not what happened at all, which is a little sad for myself and my ego, but great for the business. Because the reputation of the business is what sold them. It was because a lot of these clients come from referrals, from venues, from planners, from all those people. So when they say book Dawson Entertainment, they don't know who I am. They don't know me from the club or from AV8 Records or whatever. They know that this person who's trusted to them in the industry recommended my company. So then when I'd be offering these other DJs, which I only have two at this point that I recommend, they were almost always awesome, cool. We trust you. We trust your reputation. Let's do it. Which I was like, I was blown away that that was the case. Because I think like probably like all of us on here, we book the DJ with the client up front. It's not like book us and then we'll throw you a DJ a couple months out. I book the DJ right there. They meet with them the first meeting and it goes from there. So, you know, having that DJ be the be important to them is obviously really important to me and kind of the brand. But I was definitely surprised that that was the case and happy to see that was the case.
Yeah, Gio, I think for you, like, you got to look at it and think, how much are you referring other people when you're already booked? Like, you, if you're referring, if you get a call every weekend for that you're already booked and someone is asking for that date and you're already booked on those dates, that's when you can take on one other person and start with one. And I like what JD said about saying, pick somebody that you can train from the ground up. Don't go get somebody that has bad habits, that is not going to listen to you, that thinks that they know it all, because he said it too. We're narcissistic. We're all DJs. We all think we're the best at what we do. So take someone that you can mold and make your own and make a second version of you and then grow from there, because then that person may be able to take the tendencies and the things that you taught them, and they may be a better trainer than you are. You never know. So I am not fortunate enough to own, like, I don't own LaForce. I'm a partner in LaForce. So Glenn started LaForce and I came on in year one, and I became his number one trainer and his salesperson for 4 years, and then now all I do is training and development. So it was a thing where he looked at it as, you know, you have to look at when he started this thing, he always tells us is like, I was referring so many events out to other guys where I looked as I could take other people on and then make a little bit of money off that DJ, or, you know, for us, we buy everything for them. We buy their speakers, we buy their cables, we buy their bags, we buy their carts, we buy everything that they have in their DJ gear, we own. So we take a higher percentage of their fee. So then in course, we make more money off of them. We usually pay their gear off within 5-6 events. And so after that, it's just straight profit. So you have to look at it to think, okay, when do I need to add that second person? If you're referring every day out to somebody else because you're already booked, that's when you definitely need to add somebody else, because, I mean, you're just sending money in a different direction.
Gio, if you don't mind, I know you didn't really specifically ask me, but I think I have some good
input. The multi-op guys, you're included in that.
In there, son.
Well, I just wanted to say something just because you know at least four of the guys on my team. Two of them are right here. And
I've given some work to Art before, but it's the part where I kind of
work for all you guys. Let's go.
Kind of want to step back a little bit and really like get a roster of DJ doing time. You know.
So I was the first guy. Maybe kind of like what Nate's saying. I was the first guy that Ryan hired, and it took Ryan a year probably of like not booking himself and having faith in growing a company through somebody else, to really, you know, basically double what he was making before. And this would have been our ninth year, like I said, and we only have nine DJs, and we would have just added a ninth DJ, Harvey Dent, but we couldn't book him anything this year, obviously. So it's really hard. Like, it's scary no matter what. And there's more guys that didn't work out than the guys that did work out. And every now and then, at the end of every year, we evaluate our guys and we're like, you know, we could potentially, this guy's a liability. We could potentially lose everything because this one guy didn't show up on time. And with Art, you know, I got to have faith in Art that if I book him a wedding a year from now, he's going to be there on time and everything. And like with Art, having to have that conversation, like, yo, if you have to go to London next October because you're a battle DJ and you're successful, we need to have that talk now. Yeah. So it's always going to be scary, but like just taking every precaution necessary is going to help you. And I think Jason said it, like try to start from the ground up. But if you can't, you know, I mean, you obviously know a bunch of good DJs that you can trust.
Yeah, and I definitely think that, you know, and several people alluded to this. So I've eased into, I guess, starting to graduate to a multi-op. So I'm maybe very close to where you are, Gio. And for me, though, I still have never, I guess, had a new company name that just other than DJ Digital Dave. All my guys I do use are subcontractors. I know some companies do subcontractors, some companies do payroll employees. But for me, when I kind of hit the moment like everyone was talking about, where I just get all of these inquiries and people are like, you know, can you do this date? I can't. So JD, to your point, I wouldn't actually take that as a bust on your ego, the fact that they're saying, oh, well, we trust you. In fact, I would actually take that as a compliment that, you know, and that's how at least I feel when people trust me and my recommendations, is that, you know, we think that you're so good, even though we wish that we could have you, we, you know, trust that you're going to recommend someone as much like you and as much of your style that will do a great job, as great of a job as possible. So I do have some guys that, you know, I sub out. I mean, I probably have about, you know, 40, 50 gigs a year, I would say, I sub out to other people, which I guess is a half decent amount. You know, I really, in just general everyday life before quarantine, I was so busy that I never had the time to say, okay, well, like, I'm going to make a separate website as like a quote unquote company. And obviously, like, my name had value to it. But the other thing I will add, Gio, to you or anyone listening to this show, and everyone alluded to this as well, I think, or several people alluded to this, and I can tell you, as someone who managed nightclubs for 4 years and hired lots and lots of employees, is that if you are hiring someone, whether they have DJing experience or not, definitely hire someone with positive habits that's going to present themselves professionally, that's going to show up on time, etc. Because you can train someone to do a certain skill, but you cannot train someone to be professional. You cannot train someone to not lose their temper. You cannot train someone to you know, show up on time. So I always focused especially when I was managing nightclubs, you know, on people's habits and the type of person they were. You know, I'm like, you can teach them how to do something, but you can't teach them to be, you know, a good employee, so to speak.
One more thing I wanted to add, Gio. Yeah. We try to treat all of our new guys that were coming to the team that year kind of like, this is our new product, and we bring them out everywhere, because so many people, planners and photographers and venue managers, are just know our face, right? Like, they're like, oh yeah, Kyle, I've known Kyle for this many years, I've known Sean for this many years, I'm familiar with them. But if we're both booked and they have a couple that wants to book with Mixing Maryland, and we're like, oh well, we got Art, they don't know Art. So we try to put Art front and center every chance that we get, so that they're familiar with Art. Oh my God, have you met Art? Art, come here. This is Art. Art's the greatest DJ ever. He's the best DJ this side of the Mississippi. We kind of treat him like a little show pony a little bit. Like, not to make it that weird. But Art, you're familiar with the process. Like, one day, like, we do a lot of
Art. Hello.
Ryan does a lot of networking, and so do I. And we're constantly bringing our DJs around so that the people that refer us and put a face with the name as much as possible. So if you're going to add somebody to your team, just you're kind of married to that person. You're like, what? This is our new DJ. Come meet the newest DJ to Posh Life. This is him. This is her. Whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And one thing that Dave kind of hit on is like being professional and stuff. We will hire guys that want to be DJs when we put ads out, when we want to hire a new crew of DJs and do DJ school. And those guys, when they go through DJ school, they're also working as a tech and working all and knowing and understanding all the lighting, knowing and understanding photo booths, and knowing every aspect of the business, so that we can kind of get to see their work ethic. Because when you guys hit it on the head, when you're talking about booking someone out 16 to 18 months in advance, you want to know that person's going to be like true and loyal to you in your business. You don't want to try to be like, okay, I'm going to bring you on. You're going to be a LaForce DJ and we're going to start booking you. But then in 3 months, they're like, they found something better and they're out. Like, we want to put those guys through the ringer to make sure that they can do everything that the company can do and that they're also going to be loyal and they're going to show up on time. And you can see their work ethic for 3 or 4 months before you actually ever put them into a program to actually train them.
Yeah. One question for Kyle and Nate. Because luckily I haven't run into this situation, but I imagine the two of you may have, where you do book a DJ a year, year and a half out, and then something happens and they're no longer with your company. Do you have any stories of how you've dealt with that situation?
Chill down my spine just now. I'm just
scrolling. Yeah, I'm dealing with one right now, actually.
You got a horror story I want to hear.
I was JD was asking the question. I'm like, oh, this is a fresh one.
Yeah, Kyle, I'm gonna let you go first.
God, I mean, like I said, I think I said this the last episode. You know, you do this long enough, you literally see everything. So, just picking one off the top of my brain, like earlier in the year is one of the first people we brought on who was a trusted DJ and worked with other companies that were around us that we knew of. So we knew he was familiar with our, you know, community and, you know, the venues and the vendors that we work with. DJs are weirdos. We all know this, right? And like this guy did something during the off season where he would like tour schools and dress up as like this character for like an anti-drug program or something. And apparently, like, he got, like, full into character and just went off the radar. And thank God, like, he started answering his phones on the Wednesday before a Saturday wedding.
Mm.
Yeah, but, like, this was, I mean, it's 2020 now. This is probably, like, 2012, 2013. So, I mean, like, you learn and you get lucky. You know, we learn to see these bad habits very early on. And like, I'm every Saturday, every Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I send 4 DJs out on a wedding. I'm scared, you know, like I can't help but not be, because one bad weekend where my DJs don't show up or don't do a good job, like I have to pick.
Yeah. And part of that too is our warehouse manager, who is on site on Saturdays, is also one of our leadership team that's also a DJ and fully capable and ready to go if somebody no shows or something like that. Luckily, we haven't had any of those like no shows on the DJ side of things. Like our guys are pretty stellar on that aspect, but we just had a guy break his non-compete and try to go against us fully and start his own thing. And so, you know, we've been dealing with calling 40 clients and replacing them. And luckily in the short term, most of my events have moved. So we considered giving them an upgrade where we'll give them a photo booth and give them an upgraded DJ and the clients are happy. But, you know, we sell the DJ first as well. And we don't, you know, we don't sell the company, we sell the DJ. So they get to pick who they want. So, you know, we've had to have some hard conversations with clients and it's nothing that we ever want to do, but you know, you have to do that when you have so many DJs working for you on your team sometimes. And luckily this has been like the first time this has ever happened where we've had to like literally just remove someone from our roster.
Well, like case scenario. So how it happened between Mixing Maryland and myself, I had been working, doing weddings exclusively through a brand out in New York, a big brand. And I was already doing work with them 2005. I was working with Scratch 2005. They opened their wedding division 2010-ish, 2011, something like that. I got on and they sent me a lot of work. And I think what happened was throughout the 8 years, 7 years that I was with them, the work started coming slowly, a lot slower from them, from that angle, from that particular, what's it called? So in my mind, it was either something, you know, inherently something about the business under, you know, going on in the office there, or maybe
Chris and I know.
Yeah, well, you guys know. I don't want to talk about anybody's business, but yeah,
I'm probably opinion part two.
They're still trying to get those Victoria's Secret checks.
Yeah. So you know, the thing for me was when Kyle had his company, and when they approached me, it was a good time. It was perfect timing. I had already been maybe a year or two kind of trying to figure out not my way out, but just what was going on with the relationship, you know, and them being based in New York, it was amazing because they had this name that could get clients from all over the world that kind of was just, you know, Googling them. But mixing Maryland and knowing these guys, like I knew Kyle, you know, and it made more sense to me to jump on a team that was local, that was growing, still growing, and I liked the people I worked for. And I think for them, they saw a guy who was loyal to one company, who didn't have a non-compete with them anymore. And it was one of those things where, like, we could trust the guy like this. Not only does he have, you know, a resume of doing these events, but he, you know, there's a person, you know, we personally know each other, and it just felt right.
Listen, the reason that DJs can't get too big of a as a company is the same reason that real estate agencies can't get too big as a company, because you have to know that you've got boots on the ground with somebody that actually is in your area. And when you try to get too big with those companies that try to say, we're going to take over the entire wedding industry, that is, or private event industry, whatever it is, it's not going to work, because someone that is instilling trust in an particular individual on their most important day of their life wants to know that that person is somebody that is attainable and is actually tangent to their direct means of comfort.
Yeah.
Period.
I think
these guys, and so as Nate was saying earlier, which I'm so down with what you were saying, because it's like the Norman Cook version of the wedding industry. Norman Cook, for you guys who don't know, is Fatboy Slim, who's all these other pseudonyms and throughout dance music, that, and every time he wanted to make a different style of music, just took on a different name so that he wouldn't conflict his different names and of all the different people he was making music for. Mm-hmm. Same as what Nate's saying. He was like, I have a business here, I want to move this here. When you hit a ceiling, you don't have to necessarily add more. What you need to add is your price. You need to start to learn that it's okay to say there's an infinite amount of time. Time is money. You can't make more time, but you can make more money. And so it's okay to say that, you know what, I have peaked out on my standard of where I'm trying to go. I don't need to add 20 new DJs. What I need to do is find a way to get to the next tier of earning, because there are tiers and levels to weddings just like everything else. I've done weddings myself where the amount of flowers, the money that was spent on the flowers for that day will boggle your mind. That will make you sin.
Chris, we've probably done weddings where the amount of flowers spent on one table was more than the amount spent on the DJ.
For real.
I've done three weddings with Andrea Ippolito, and I guarantee you the floral bills for each one of those were more than everything else on the entire event.
Completely.
So I will say this. I completely agree with you, and I just want to add that I actually raised my rate $400 during quarantine, like during COVID, and I've only had one client that's like, and I booked them for another DJ that works for me. I've only had one client that turned me down at that rate. Ironically, the client chose the DJ that worked for me and then wanted uplighting. So they could have had me and no uplighting, but they chose to have this other DJ and an uplighting. But he's a great DJ, and he's going to do a great job. But yeah, I raised my, and it was partially, I guess, for me spending all the time with my family and my wife and son that made me realize how valuable time is. Not to sound cliche, but it was really like a smack in the face realization. And I was like, shit, I'm charging, you know. And I mean, I've always, even in the club world, Chris, I'm sure you have too, you know, I mean, and I have a separate number in the mobile world. Like, I kind of have a minimum number that, like, I'm not leaving my house for less than this amount of money.
Everybody needs that number.
Decent.
Yeah, everybody absolutely needs that number. Yeah, I remember I heard a story locally years ago of a photographer who, I think she was probably in like the 5,000 range, maybe. She was getting booked a lot, and she was like, you know what? I don't want to work as much, but I want to make as much money as possible. She just doubled her rate overnight, and then she ended up being busier. She had to get subcontractors because at the higher double rate,
she was still getting crazy booked. So
at the end of the day, she was really good at what she did, though.
Obviously.
One point that we don't need to kind of what's it called, but yeah.
But no, but that's
I think, true.
At the end of the day, the people rate, that are good at that.
If you're booking, turning away that much clientele, doubling your rate might not be the worst idea.
Another thing for you too, Gio. If you're full, raise your rates.
Other side of that.
That was my point. If you're full, raise your rates. Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, if your calendar is full, you're not charging enough.
Well, and to go back to that point, you know, and a perfect example, Gio, that I've always raised my rates anytime I've had a year where I was turning down like tons of weddings, because my mindset's always been, if three people are calling me for October 9th and I'm charging $400 more or $800 more, whatever, one of those three people would have paid that higher amount. Even if two of them wouldn't have, one of them would have. And exactly. So, yeah, that's a perfect.
I mean, to circle it all back, it's we all as DJs owe it to each other to protect our industry and protect our craft and to demand more income from whatever level you're at. It doesn't mean that you have to try to be unrealistic, but you should still know where you are in your life and your career and how to charge accordingly for that and not be discounted, not be taken advantage of, and set the whole entire industry on its plane, moving the way that it should in a natural progression.
And I think a lot of DJs get complacent with, like, you know, they're making what they consider good money, but, you know, they get more and more in demand, and 3-4 years later, they haven't changed their rate at all. And they might be happy with what they're making, but they're still leaving a lot on the table and could be making a lot more.
Yeah.
Jason and Nate, real quick, has it been hard for you to book a DJ that you're familiar with or your acquaintances with? Like, obviously Art and Sean are good buddies of mine, knowing that like you can't book them another year. And like Art was saying, you know, things are a little bit slow at first. Like, yeah, like Art, if you join the team in May, like I probably can't book you until, you know, fall 2020.
I mean, since we're large enough, like we have 30 DJs, like I said, on our roster, and We have one package that is, if they come and look at us and they say, you know, they're not going to pay $2,000 for a DJ, we have a $1,000 package. It's called the Just DJ package. And it's literally, we're going to assign the DJ 60 days out because we can keep our guys flexible. And then we will only book three of those a week, knowing that we may not book 30 guys on a Saturday. So we book three Just DJ packages a week. And then I've taken them. If I'm not working on a weekend and I know that I still want to hit my numbers and my wife's gone doing something for the weekend, I'm going to take that event because I'm still working. I'm going to add to my numbers. But it also allows me to keep guys flexible. If guys that are usually booked on those weekends are not, I can say, hey, I got a Just DJ package. You know what it's going to pay you. Do you want to take it or not? They can say yes or no. And then new guys can come in and literally scoop up all those Just DJ packages, and their calendar is going to be full straight off the bat because we're not assigning those DJs until 60 days out. But for the most part, I did say we only book just the DJ, but we do have that one package that's $1,000, DJ only, 5 hours. That's what the client gets, and they know and understand. If they still want us, they're basically crapshooting. They don't know who they're going to get, but they're going to look at our roster. They may end up with me. They may end up with one of our brand new guys, but it's going to be up to them at that point.
It's like Hotel Tonight.
I mean, you've really thought of everything, haven't you?
I wrote that down, and I'm going to have a
business. I haven't. I've got a great team, a leadership team that
notes, bro.
We practice, and we
or just listen to the recording, watch the recording.
Keep learning, bro. If you're never learning and adapting, you're dying.
Yeah,
true. Sure.
I could say for the first guy that I brought on, like I mentioned, I put him out with some other companies first. So he was getting work through them during that kind of transition time. So when I booked him a year out, I knew he was going to be getting experience with his other company during that time without any liability to me.
Interesting.
I also book some clubs and things like that. So I was putting him in club nights anytime I could where he was free. I'd have him assist me on weddings if he wasn't booked. So yeah, I did everything I could. I like networked him with other clubs within like an hour radius, so he was getting work with them too. So, you know, I did try and fill up his calendar as much as possible during that time, for sure.
Wow. I want to speak to something. Art kind of touched on this a bit, but JD and Nate got me thinking about this from the opposite perspective, because there's a lot of conversation about the multi-op position. I want to make sure that as a reminder for all of us here on this panel in this discussion, as well as for any of the students out there watching and listening, keep in mind that the role of a multi-op owner or a partnership or whoever is running a agency company is to find you work. However, you are only desirable to an agency. I'm going to underscore this. You are desirable to an agency by being consistently professional, consistently hardworking, consistently punctual. And these are all the things that you can't, just like was said before, you can't teach somebody. You have to develop that stuff on your own. Yeah. If somebody's looking at an industry in any city, any state, and saying, okay, who out here would I want to have represent my brand as a multi-op owner? They're going to pick the people that they're the most trustworthy, that they're the most familiar with, that they know are good DJs. And when what we've been talking about throughout most of this hour has been specializing. As a individual working DJ, working with an agency, I've worked with other agencies in the past, and it was an issue, a conflict of issues with specialization. I am a really good DJ. I am a terrible accountant. I hired an accountant. I am a terrible, terrible, terrible person at going to every single networking event and making sure I meet all the people so they send me work later. So, hey, I just happen to have friends that are good with that. And yeah. So I'd rather let my friends that are good with that be good with that, and I could spend my time in my house scratching.
Let me tell you something real quick about Sean. When Sean became available, that man became like the Kevin Durant of free agency. It was like, Sean's free. Get on him right now. I don't care how much he costs. Bring him to me. I want him. Thank on. You, man. I had my eye on Sean for like 3 years, but it was like with another company, so I'm never trying to overstep. But when he was like, I'm thinking about leaving, I was like, yes!
Yeah, and I could say for Mixing Maryland, they really, for me at least, they really let me do, back to touch upon what Sean was saying too, if anybody knows me, I'm super personable, super artsy, and that's where I'm good at doing. You know, I'm not good at crunching numbers. I'm, you know, business, I'm basic. I know enough to be able to put myself in a situation like this and not seem like an idiot. But at the end of the day, I'm learning so much from everything you guys are saying, and it's a great thing. If I could steer the conversation somewhere else real quick.
Doc Bluss represent. He was like, yeah, but not too many dudes can say they're a champion, world champion. What's up, bro?
Oh, yeah. Well, how about this? Now that we just brought that up, I think let's take this out of the what's the one saying? Everybody thinks a DMC guy can't rock a club, doesn't know how to rock a party, can't do this stuff. I'm here to take all those all that and just blow it away, because
who says that? Again,
yeah, I wouldn't think that,
dude. No, a lot of people, you know, have this idea, like, you
actually I know hey. DMC guys that have told me they can't rock a party or a club.
No, and that's the thing. I mean, it's a mind state. For me,
people think it's a routine, and that's all you're doing.
Yeah, I just knew that I loved DJing, and battling helped me get all my super creative ideas out, because I had that too. But then as I realized I can get paid to stand behind DJ equipment for even longer hours and do less work, but look pretty behind turntables, that's cool too. I just have to stand behind here and do like less and like not scratch it for 6 hours. Yeah.
Yo, what's that part of the photo?
But I guess my question, I had a question for Megan.
Aw, thanks.
What, pre-COVID, what the hell is, what is a party like at Facebook? If you said DJing parties for Facebook, like what kind of
parties? We did breeze over that really quickly.
Oh, I did their I did like the Chicago office. It's just, they've got a big Chicago office, so I did their holiday party, and you know, it was they're really fun because they're really young and it's a really diverse group, and they come to party. So this is a really cool thing that they did. They wanted to integrate the technology, so I would take requests. They put my Facebook like link, and then people would DM me requests. So they put them up on screens so people could like look up my Facebook page and message me requests. And it was like a bit of a firestorm with requests.
I'm sure. And weirdos. And weirdos.
It's showing up there.
Did you get it? Did you get it? Are you going to play it? And I'm like, yeah, like calm down. Like, so, but actually like opened up a portal for like really good communication. So I could, and then like multiple songs. So like it actually was like kind of new, but I had to like really, it was just juggle a lot too, but they had great parties.
Wow, that makes sense.
I have like a quick topic if I can just throw out there, a quick question for some of the guys or girls who have done weddings so far, was requests. Like, you know, having somebody come up in your personal space and start talking to you is already tough. I know Nate said there's already kind of like a barrier there. What I've been doing, which I had already kind of done in the past, was I just flip my timeline backwards and I just write requests, and somebody can just walk up and write it down. But it's really tough to not seem rude and get that bad Wedding Wire review. Like,
I've had part of my barrier.
Call a mother-in-law or a bride's mother off.
That's bad. That's the person writing the check.
It's bad, but it's like she was also very drunk.
Yeah.
So I had to like let her know because she keeps coming around the table. And it's like I'm wearing a mask. I need to be safe here. You need to stay on the other side. You know, like
yeah.
I wasn't like all pissed and everything, but like.
Yeah, it's a tough spot.
I'd be a little stern.
Yeah, I had a gig where I was at a wedding. My one wedding, I was on a stage, and this guy just rolled up like nothing's going on, no mask on, and he starts talking to me. And I'm like, you can't be up here. And he just looks so like I insulted him that I told him he couldn't be up on the stage. Like,
yeah, we've actually been trying to like sell our stages at a cheaper rate just to keep our guys safer, to elevate them so they're further away. Also, we're using front board facades for most of our stuff, so I'm going to put that about a foot and a half further than I usually would. Usually it's right up against my CDJs. Mm. Now I've got like a big gap between it, so if they're at least further distance where, you know, I can turn my booth monitor down and I can hear them talk over the facade, but really try to keep that 6 feet barrier. And if you see someone approaching you, throw your mask on, just to like, even if you're playing without your mask, because you have that distance and you know someone's coming to you and you guys we're all DJs, you know when someone's coming to talk to you and ask you for a request. Yeah. Just throw your mask on real quick.
I have a quick tip, Nate. Usually when people try to request songs for me, I actually tend to turn my booth monitor up is actually usually my solution when I'm getting requests. I can't hear you. real story, not at private events, but at nightclubs, I've legit done that and been like, yeah, I can't hear you, it's too loud here.
But I don't miss
I'll
about
be like
club.
Oh, I already played it.
Oh, that's the best.
They look at you like, oh, I missed
nobody
it.
Will like, know sorry. If you play it again.
Man, we could do an entire episode on the request.
Oh my god!
If I can give a quick tip on that one, because it's very concrete and I can do it in like 1 minute. One thing that having conversations with Kyle's business partner Ryan and Mixing Maryland, just like how to kind of navigate this in late 2020, mid 2020. We found that you can look up on Amazon. They sell them as Amazon Basics adjustable DJ laptop and projector stands. So I got one sitting right behind me, and because all the Zoom craziness going on the screen, anybody listening to the audio, you can't see it. But just put that in Amazon real quick. Pick one of those up. What I've done is taken a clipboard with a stack of paper, written request by hand on top of that, face it towards the audience, and put it outside of the DJ table in front of my monitor. So you can't go past just the table. You got to go past the table and the monitor if you want to get close to me and talk to me and give me the request in my ear. People have still tried it when they're drunk. But that barrier, I don't like facades personally. It's just not my thing. It worked a lot more effectively than anything else I've tried so far.
Well, Sean,
real quick, I have a couple friends, one of which specifically is immunocompromised. that have invested in drum shields and are using, you know, that are basically plexiglass is about 6 foot high and are using drum shields around their DJ table. You know, that's not something I'd personally be interested in, and I don't kind of want that blockade there. But if it is something where you're more concerned or you are a higher risk or have family members that are higher risk, definitely a drum shield is something that would be a worthwhile investment.
Well, going back to Sean, you were just basically you were throwing out a tip there, but it's basically, you know, we're at the end of the episode now, so but we want to end off the show with another tip for our students watching the podcast. So right now, folks, I'm going to pass it off to Sean Jay for his tech tip of the week, and that's going to be the final segment of the night. So Sean, if once you're ready, take it away.
Thank you, sir. All right. So quick and dirty tech tip. I almost forgot I was going to be doing this. So we actually talked at the end of our previous episode that here at the Beat Refinery, we are a school and we've got some events coming up where we're going to be doing some workshops. One of the workshops I've been doing and one of the things I've been getting questions about basically since the moment we got stuck in our houses has been, I'm a huge nerd. I like staying in my house and doing tech things with computers. So it's all live streaming. Now, with that said, everybody's basically turned themselves into a TV producer and you've got your setup at home. But as we're getting closer and closer to going outside of the house again, and people have built up these audiences of live stream, people who watch them do their gigs, the question started becoming, is this sustainable long term? How can you do this outside of your house? And I started realizing there's this entire community, this entire world of IRL streamers, as they're called. These are people that for a couple years now have basically made use of their cell phones or external cameras using Wi-Fi hotspots or cell data plans in order to broadcast their day-to-day life. A little extreme for what we're trying to do, but here's something that I was able to find just kind of by poking around in this world of IRL streamers, and it's something we all have access to. I'm pretty sure this is an iOS or Android solution, but I'm going to switch my screen over here so you guys can see, if we go full size, my cell phone. You guys get a little peek behind the curtain of what's going on in Sean Jay's house. So, can you guys see that all right?
Yeah.
All right, this is a transparent view of my phone. So, hey, that's me on my screen. Oh, excuse me, Streamlabs app on my phone. I'm going to back out so you guys can see it. Created by the same people that make Streamlabs OBS and the website where you've got all these overlays and extra features you can use for your live streams. Oh, I forgot to turn off the video filter. So let's do that real quick. But the key here is if you're using the Streamlabs app on a cell phone, you can do all of the same things, including one of the standout features that makes your stream a lot more customized. So I'm going to go in here into the editor. And what is that? Hey, that is the URL for a Restream chat widget. You can click up here in the top right-hand corner, and then you can add in multiple layers. You can add in images. You can add in text. It's a very simplified version of what you would do if you were using OBS Broadcaster on your computer. So here's the beauty of what I found out with this. The same process of entering in an RTMP code and all the other technical things you need to know about in order to do a live stream on your computer, you can add that information here. You can link it to your Twitch account, YouTube, Facebook, whatever. Facebook's on its way out. Here's what I've done, and we're going to do a quick broadcast to test it out. If you guys see here in the bottom left-hand corner, that is my Restream chat. This watermark that says Streamlabs is their branded thing, but everything here shows up the exact same way as it would if I was using my computer. Therefore, I could walk around in my day-to-day life, hypothetically, and be live streaming to my audience that I've established.
Or
you can add in an overlay from a third-party site. You can't use Stream Elements because I tried that, and I use Stream Elements for everything, but you can use Streamlabs branded overlays or other third parties. So I suggest anybody who's really spent the time to build up a live stream audience, take your phone, grab one of those cheap little tripods for your phone with a holder, place it here in front of your turntables, and while you're doing your gig, you can live stream to your audience, you can shout out the chat, all that same kind of stuff, and now you don't have to worry about alienating your audience now that you're back DJing in real life. I'm going to be getting a lot more into this as well as some of the more advanced stuff in my live streaming workshop with the Beat Refinery fam, Bach to Rock style. But that's our tech tip for the week. I'll show you guys one more time. The Streamlabs app. Right up here, iOS and I believe Android, but Google can tell you if I'm right or wrong there.
Sweet. All right. Thanks, Sean, for the tech tip of the week. That segues perfectly, actually, to promoting your upcoming virtual workshop for this coming Thursday. Like I mentioned last week on this show, the Beat Refinery DJ School is hosting virtual workshops every 2 weeks on Thursdays, starting September 24th. The first one is Sean J's Introduction to Live Streaming Workshop this Thursday, September 24th. And like I said before, DJ As One, Stylus Chris, as well as the homie DJ Throwdown are hosting and teaching their own virtual workshops after that. Again, it happens every 2 weeks on Thursday, starting this week on September 24th. More info on the dates and the times and pricing. More info at beatrefinery.com, or just look for the promo on our socials at Beat Refinery and sign up for those workshops if you want to get your learning on with my co-hosts over here. Get your learn on. But guys, that is it for this show. Once again, I mean, we could have talked a lot more with everything we talked about tonight, and there was a lot of information there. Hope everybody learned a lot.
Information overload for you.
Information overload.
So good.
But once again,
thank you guys so much.
Yeah,
sure, man. Oh, thanks for having us. It was great meeting all of y'all.
Give it up one more time for a special
good stuff, guys.
Digital Dave, Megan Taylor, Nate Nelson, DJ JD, and DJ Little Rock.
Woo! Yay!
Yeah. If you missed this show, you can watch the replay of this episode and any of our past shows on Facebook.com/BeatRefinery or YouTube.com/BeatRefinery. If you prefer to listen to the audio side of things, this episode is going to be uploaded this Thursday to Apple, Spotify, Mixcloud, wherever you consume and listen to all things podcasts. So be sure to subscribe and rate us. We always appreciate the love and support from everybody. Come back and tune in with us again next Monday, 9 p.m. We have a new episode next week and a new set of DJs on this guest panel. So with that, thank you once again for watching. Stay safe. Keep wearing a mask. Spread some love. Everybody say peace.
Peace. Peace. Spread love, not droplets.
Spread love, not COVID.
Watch out for the super spreaders. Super spreaders.